I always forget about that. So today, it's Good Shepherd Sunday, and the reading is from John 10. Apparently, it's always the fourth Sunday after Easter, which is something I learned yesterday. So my seminary professors failed me, I'd like to think that. And the interesting thing about John 10 is that we kind of need to read it as a whole. And I know for the lectionary, because otherwise it'd be way too long, I had to make some choices. It's right after Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly," that he says, "I am the good shepherd." And I said that with the wrong emphasis just now, because I think that the best way to understand this, and I'll explain why in a moment, is to hear the emphasis on the word good. I am the good shepherd, which would lead us to ask, as opposed to the bad shepherds? And that's exactly correct. See, this takes place during the Feast of Dedication, is what John calls it. We would know that that holiday as Hanukkah. And it was a time when the Jewish people would remember about 150-ish, plus or minus a few, years before when the Greek ruler Antiochus Epiphanes IV, you don't need to remember that name, tried to erect a statue of Zeus in the temple complex. And as you might imagine, don't do that. And he tried to force the Jewish people to offer sacrifices to him. And Judas Maccabeus got up, became just absolutely enraged and started killing Greek guards. And then his family joined in, and then there was a riot, and then there was a revolt, and then there was a war. And they were successful-ish for a while. The temple, of course, was desecrated, and it had to be cleansed. And if you endured my class on Leviticus a couple years ago, you know there's a lot that goes into that. And one of them is that the lampstand needs to burn for 8 days. But they only had enough oil for one day. They decided to do it anyway, and behold, the oil lasted as long as they needed. It was a miracle. The reason why this is important for Jesus being a good shepherd is that it kicked off a long period of violent revolt. The Jewish people were very successful, or fairly successful, against the Greeks by engaging in guerrilla-style warfare, something that they couldn't really manage, the Greeks anyway. And that's guerrilla, G-U-E, not G-O-R, which just sounds so cool in my mind, but whatever. whatever. for a time. But then the Romans came and just took everything out. And that didn't solve the problem. There was a long period of dis-ease in the region. And that period actually extends far beyond the time of Jesus. But Jesus speaking roughly 30 to 33 AD, he seems to understand that there's more coming, but nobody else does. But every potential leader of the people before Jesus led in the same way that the Maccabees did, the Hasmoneans, led some kind of violent revolt. And the only effect that that really had was it got a lot of people killed, mostly Jewish. And so it was a time when the people were pining and waiting for the right leader. And Israel's history being what it is, and we'll get into that in a second, is that they kind of understood their leaders as shepherds. And when Jesus says, "I'm the good shepherd, I lay down my life for my sheep," we need to read that as Jesus is the good one who lays himself down for his people, not the ones that came before him who got a lot of people killed, who bought into this kind of weird theocratic kind of nationalistic Israel that sought to use violence as a weapon against the epitome of violence. And when that happens, only violence wins. Violence in the right context can maybe contain evil, but in this case, it just seemed to compound it. And so for Jesus to identify himself as the good shepherd, He's identifying himself as the leader of Israel, the rightful leader. But his leadership, his kingship, or his act as a shepherd is going to be different. I think it was Patton, and I'm sure if I'm wrong, we've got several here who will correct me immediately, and you are welcome to do so. I think it was General Patton who said, war is not dying for your country, it's making the other guy die for his. Was that Patton? All right, there we go. Yeah, I hear that in at least three spots. So, and what Jesus is saying is, no, I've got a different story. I lay down myself for everybody else. Now, the fact that he is keying into this idea of shepherd tells us so much if we have the ears to hear it. It's been kind of a misnomer over the last maybe 20 or 30 years, and it comes up more so during Christmas. This idea that shepherds were considered second-class citizens or something like that. That's not the case. There's like one mention of something like that in a piece of Jewish writing that is hundreds of years after the time of Jesus. And it doesn't make sense to kind of retrofit that. Because Israel, first off, was not a major player in the global geopolitical sphere in its time, ancient Israel. They were not particularly special from everybody else's perspective. They weren't great artisans. Their pottery is honestly kind of mediocre. Like, I don't know a lot about that, and I've seen it, and even I can tell. They didn't create a ton of art. They weren't necessarily immense builders. It was Herod the Great in the Roman period who did the great building. And realistically, they were just a group of shepherds. That was what their society and their economy was built on. But they took immense pride in that, which is why Psalm 23 was written. Why David, the great King David, who did some not great things also, was a shepherd. And even that story of David and Goliath, the great Philistine warrior, is misunderstood. And it's been kind of kiddified, infantilized. I don't know the right word. Words are hard. We've told this as a Sunday school story, but it's not. David offered to take out this guy, and everyone else is terrified. And the king, Saul, who should have been the one to fight him, said, you're a kid. He's been a warrior since his kid. And David does not say, oh, but God will be my shield. No, nonsense. You know what David says? I'm a shepherd. I've killed lions and bears. I'm not afraid of this guy. Now, shepherding, back then, I have no idea now, shepherding is a full contact sport. Yeah, seriously. I've only had one encounter with a sheep, and that was in Ireland, and it was basically my friend taunting it from a distance and going, hey, so should somebody tell Dustin that's not a good idea? Nah, he's going to figure it out. And sure enough, he goes running because that sheep was mean. But imagine it is your job to keep track of hundreds of those guys. You're going to be tackling them. You've got tools. You think that little crook, the shepherd's staff, that's not a nice tool. It's a sheep have a tendency to get themselves stuck in things, so you've got to dig them out while keeping everything else safe. You have to fight off wolves and lions and bears. No tigers, oh my. And while a shepherd, for example, David, would be keeping his flock, you want to keep them all together, because if they spread, you're in trouble. Any guesses on the most efficient way to get a sheep startled so it runs back to the herd? Sling. All day, just whack, whack. Just right, skip it right next to the sheep, and he's going to be afraid. You get pretty good at that. And considering even the Egyptian armies were known for having battalions of slingers, we're not talking about a toy. We're talking about something incredibly dangerous. So David, the great shepherd, not the good shepherd, the great shepherd, the king, When he approaches this Philistine warrior, he says, I have a ranged weapon. He has a long sword. I can get him first. And he does. And the legends kind of continue. Israel was known for being really good shepherds. And this should give us an image probably akin to like the cowboys of the Wild West. You know, rugged, tough. They're able to withstand the elements, a sort of natural wisdom in how to deal with the herds or the flocks that they're kind of dealing with. The fact that they can't get hurt, they can't get sick because somebody still has to take care of the flock. Think that. It's kind of known in like the medical community, for example, if a farmer shows up at the emergency room, immediately call a code because they're about to die, because otherwise they're never going to come in. Now, take all of that image and funnel it into what Jesus is saying. Because the images like these can be helpful. And they can also be slightly misleading. My fear is that we hear of Jesus as the good shepherd patting his sheep on the head. This is gentle Jesus, meek and mild. But the reality is that Jesus is presenting himself that as somebody who is undeterred and maybe in a sense undeterrable. He's not particularly afraid of what's going to come at him. He is more than happy to fight off the wolves and probably has that experience. That's a shepherd. There's a lot of talk in kind of, I don't know, the broader world, or maybe it's just the internet and I spend too much time on that, about what masculinity means. And maybe you've heard of the phrase like toxic masculinity and things like that. I don't feel like getting into the details of that. But if you think about Jesus as maybe an ideal form of what masculinity means, it's this idea of immense strength and choosing only to use it when absolutely necessary. And in such a focused way that it encourages the flourishing and life and safety of everybody else. That's masculinity. And then he twists the image. I'm the good shepherd. I lay down my life for my sheep. Having all the experience and wisdom and strength, all of these skills that would make them particularly tough and dangerous, and then choosing not to use those to simply kill all the bad guys, but rather to give himself up into the hands of the enemy for the sake of everybody else, is the next level of what it means to be strong. This is not just having all the strength in the world and choosing not to use it, but rather having all the strength in the world and using it and then choosing precisely when not to. There's a nuance there, a difference that tells us that, Jesus is perhaps somebody very, very different. And he's giving us, in some ways, a model of what it means to be a leader. You may have heard the phrase, it doesn't get used quite as much anymore, but the phrase servant leadership. The idea of a leader going first, a leader paving the way, a leader willing to lay down himself and his own interest for the sake of those that he cares for. That's a leader I would follow. And to take that phrase further, and very specifically, I'd follow that leader to the gates of hell. Because you know you're going to be okay. That's Jesus. And then there's the sheep. We're often compared to sheep. And Jerry, you set me up perfectly. That was not planned. Sheep are dumb. I'm just going to say it. They're mean. They can be. Sheep bite. Ask any pastor, anybody. Hey, do sheep bite? They will tell you yes before you finish that sentence. Try not to look. I'm not like implicating anybody here. seriously, because that's not the time to say that. In their profound dumbness, sheep can also be really complicated to keep together. Just like if you try to get a group of people to work as a cohesive team, buckle up. sheep smell bad. I'm not saying you guys smell. Although it is a saying in good pastoral leadership that a good shepherd smells like his sheep, meaning he spends time with them. He knows them. And that's exactly the image we see of Jesus. He knows their names. He calls them. And the sheep know their names and they know the voice of the shepherd and they follow. This is not an ideal, like an idyllic, idyllic, there we go, precious moments kind of image, but it's one that takes the grit of life very seriously. And even though things get really challenging, and even though we as sheep, we are all guilty of all of the biting and the wandering and the deciding that we know the right way to go, only to get stuck again. Our ability to harm ourselves and those around us seems to know no bound. Human suffering has no limit. And yet Jesus is the good shepherd. And rather than using force and coercion, he just calls your name and invites you back into the fold. Again, that's the kind of leader I would follow to the gates of hell. And in that sense, Jesus is very deeply gentle. And thank God for that. It's probably a personality thing, but I don't respond well to a leader who's domineering. In fact, that's a really good way to get me to just do the opposite of whatever they're trying to get me to do. But somebody who's gentle, whose strength I respect because they choose not to use it unless absolutely necessary, I'll follow him. Absolutely, I'll follow him. And I suspect I'm not the only one. And then ultimately, what Jesus presents for us is a leader with all the strength, skill and patience, kindness and gentleness that you would need to adequately lead and take care of a group of very complicated creatures who are also at the same time quite simple. And how do you know that that's the one you want to follow? Well, the question is simple. Will he lay down his life for the rest of you? There's only one ultimate king, only one leader that will do that, and that is Jesus. And we know that he will do that because that's exactly what he did. Early on in his ministry, when he encounters John the Baptizer and he himself is washed in the Jordan River, Jesus is proclaimed to be the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And at this point, we would say to John, the author, hey, pick a metaphor and stick with it. That's not how you get a good grade in English. But he's not writing an essay in English. He's telling us a story that has no ultimate end. Jesus is both the shepherd and the sheep. And in both cases, he gives his life up for us. So then what do we do? Well, there were a lot of little lessons along the way. What it means to have strength and use it or not. What it means to be a good leader or not. But my hope is that we see ourselves as the sheep of Jesus in all of our specialness, in our infinite ability to wander and assume, ooh, this is probably where I want to go. This is what is going to make my life infinitely better, only to discover that it is a patch of thorns, and now the shepherd needs to pull us out again. And then he does. Except for us, the metaphor changes. It's not that we just need Jesus to pull us up and pat us on the head and send us on our way. But the brokenness that we carry, the ways in which we harm each other and those or ourselves and those around us, what that Bible will call sin, has created a much bigger problem than any sheep can create. And that is that separation from the divine, from God, from God's very presence. And in just a really weird twist, it requires the blood of the Lamb of God to bridge that divide. Jesus, as the good shepherd, did lay down his life. And if that were the end of the story, we would say, of course, that was an interesting guy who had some weird things to say. Let's go find something else to do. But the good shepherd came back. And because he came back, it isn't just that we're forgiven and we can pat ourselves on the back saying, yay, that's nice, but rather he has invited us into a new way of being community, new way of being a family or a flock, however you want to call it. One that follows the great shepherd, or the good shepherd rather, who laid down his life, and now we learn to do the same for each other. Amen. As you are able, please rise.